Talking Points, the loverugbyleague.com podcast with Dave Parkinson and James Gordon. Episode 2. Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Talking Points. I'm Dave Parkinson and I'm joined, as before, by James Gordon. Hello James, you alright?
Hi Dave, not so bad yourself?
Not so bad. Well, with this edition we're going to be having a chat about the Crusaders. They've been the big story in the off-season in Super League. We'll be looking back at the international scene and just what's gone on. We'll be discussing about a potential idea of what we can all be doing on a Boxing Day. And we'll also be looking at three clubs' recruitment in Super League as we build towards the start of the Super League season. First of all, James, Crusaders, where do we start?
Where do we start? Yeah, they seem to grab all the headlines of the close season. It's two close seasons in succession now that they've made the news, perhaps for the wrong reasons, but they're through it now, and I think it's probably a good time to put it behind them and kick on for the new season. It's just whether the hangover from it is going to harm them going into the new campaign.
Now, just in case anybody's had the head buried in the sand over the last 3 or 4 months, just explain a little bit about what we were coming from. I think with Crusaders, they ended off last season, didn't they, in quite a lot of financial difficulty. There were varying figures of between £750,000 and £1.5 million that were owed. The club was losing money hand over fist. Much of it, we're led to believe, was inherited debt, though, from the time when certainly they were involved down at Bridgend.
Yeah, it's been difficult. It's been difficult for the new owners, for the North Wales-based owners, I should say, because on the face of it, Crusaders had a very, very good 2010. They got Brian Noble in, which was a shrewd move. I think if they'd have had him in 2009, they would have done a lot better. They obviously made the playoffs on the part, which was an excellent achievement, and unfortunately that excellent achievement has been overshadowed by the off field problems when in reality we should have been looking at, well, hang on, Crusaders here, they've been in Super League 2 seasons, they finished in the top 8, where can they go from here? But instead we've had the problems which as you say apparently stem from the previous ownership in Bridgend, which is a shame for, I think it's Ian Roberts and Jeff Moss at Crusaders now, because the crowd figures were up. Obviously the move to North Wales did have the desired effect. The move itself was controversial, but they made a success of it, and it's just a shame that the progress that they made in 2010 has almost been reset, if you like, by the fact that all these problems have happened. They've been forced into administration, and the hangover for that's going to continue to 2011, courtesy of the points deduction, of course.
And they've broken new ground as well, haven't they? I mean, let's keep in mind that probably not since Hull Kingston Rovers got promoted in the olden days and Widnes has a team done quite as well.
Yeah, it was always going to be difficult in that first season for them, but they certainly held their own in 2010. And the thing about it now is trying to keep up to that levels. I mean, in terms of breaking new ground, the North Wales base proved ideal and perhaps should have been looked at previously. The licence was given to a South Wales based club, which was controversial at the time, and remains controversial as obviously they're no longer a South Wales club. But North Wales is a untapped resource. Rugby union's not massive there, at least it's not as massive as it is in South Wales, and it's not far from the traditional areas of rugby league, so you're looking at away fans, it's a reasonable trip for them to make, and there are plenty of people in North Wales who've now tagged along to Crusaders matches who were previously watching maybe St Helens or Widnes or Warrington simply because they didn't have a local team, and that is reflected in the crowds, and you saw it, was it Huddersfield?
They played Leeds on the opening day of the season, didn't they? Where they had a sellout. But are you talking about the playoff game at Huddersfield?
The playoff game at Huddersfield, where
they took about a thousand, didn't they?
A large following of fans, and that is perhaps a reflection on them becoming a greater part of the rugby league family, as opposed to being sort of the new boys who were sort of a bit far away for everybody's liking, like it or not. That's simply the short minded attitude of some people. But
do you think that's how a lot of people looked at him, sort of coming into the competition, being based in South Wales? It's away from rugby league territory. People have to travel to get down there.
I think that's the difficulty for most of the expansion teams, and it's not going to go away, but I think gradual expansion will work. So gradually expanding to North Wales, we should mention South Wales Scorpions as well, who are doing a brilliant job of they sort of built themselves up on the foundations that Crusaders left, and I mean they've got a 95% Welsh team now, and that's providing the foundation for the Four Nations and for Wales reaching the Four Nations, I should say. And the thing is that because Crusaders are based in North Wales, when the time comes for Scorpions to step up, then that's not a massive distance away from North Wales, and then you've got the two teams together there, and then that's gradually moving down south. And I think maybe that's a problem that Harlequins have had, is that there's
nowhere to bridge the gap in between.
There's nowhere between the traditional M62 corridor or whatever to the London team. I mean, you look at Catalans, and it's almost as if London bridged the gap to Catalans, even though in distance terms it's not, but people see it that way. And I've always found it a bit bizarre as to why rugby league's never tried to make a go of it in the Midlands. Obviously you've got plenty of development sides in there now, but there's never really been an attempt at getting a team placed in Birmingham, for instance. Or
it's funny you should mention that, because I mean, every time I go down to Birmingham, obviously you head down the M6, and then just at the side there's that Bescot Stadium, which is what I always look at that off the motorway and think that's a perfect size for rugby league. It's about 10,000 capacity, and you're just thinking, we need a game down there just to test the waters and just to find out. It's all right, they've come up with like this the magic weekend experience, but in days gone by, and you'll have to forgive me for harking back, you know, into the past, but they have taken games on the road, haven't they? I seem to remember games a few years ago taking place at Hearts Ground in Scotland, for example, down in South Wales, when they were trying to establish something there early doors anyway. I think that you're right. I think that rugby league is missing a trick through not just gradually expanding its borders just down to that area.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously the sort of, you've always got the anti-expansionists and the expansionists, and the expansionists are always sort of, everyone's narrow-minded in the M62 corridor. But let's not forget, times have changed over the past couple of decades, and there are going to be plenty of people who were brought up in the M62 corridor who were brought up with rugby league who no longer live there, so they're dotted around in all areas of the country, and there's no one really bridging the gap between the north and the south, and it's no wonder that the divide still exists. And I think that's where you're right in what you say, they're missing a trick by not looking at gradual expansion. Yeah, it'd be great to have an established Super League team in South Wales, but let's walk before we run, so to speak. Let's get the team in North Wales, and I think although it's caused controversy, I'm glad that Crusaders are now trying it in North Wales, and hopefully they'll establish that as a new rugby league heartland, and then gradually that'll make its way down to South Wales, and then there you go, you've established a new heartland for rugby league. Wales's Four Nations progress obviously will impact on that as well, And then that's when you start to look at, well, hang on, let's see how we can do. Can we get Coventry Bears, I think it is, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Can we get them in Championship 1, for instance? Can we start working around with them somehow? Because naturally, with any expansion side, they will be getting some sort of nudge, some sort of guidance from the RFL. I don't think it's as extreme as some anti-expansionists put out, but it's only right for the RFL to look after the interests of the game by giving these teams a nudge, and you only have to look at, as I say about Scorpions, I've been following their progress quite closely, and they got the third highest attendances in Championship 1 last season. They've got, as I mentioned again, a 95% Wales homegrown squad. They're giving opportunities to local players, and they're really flying the flag for the game down there as a excellent example of how an expansion area should work, and hopefully rugby league will reap the rewards of that in the years to come.
Playing devil's advocate, it's a bit of a shame that the people involved at South Wales Scorpions weren't involved with the original Crusaders club, isn't it?
Yeah, there are a handful, I think, that you might see the odd few faces about, but yeah, it's a bit strange what went on, because I suppose it's akin to someone taking Lee and having them playing in Newcastle or something.
It nearly
like
happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Going back a few years, yeah, Lee nearly merged with London. Oh,
right,
I would have been quite interested to see that one.
Yeah,
you know, but
yeah.
During the days of Richard Branson's,
maybe they'd have had to have played their own games at Walsall just to bridge the gap. But I mean, that's what it is. And then you've got a feel for the fans that were left behind in South Wales that have probably been alienated from rugby league because of that episode. Some of them have no doubt stayed on and followed the team in Neath now, but you learn from your mistakes and hopefully the RFL have learnt from a couple of the mistakes they've made and will make sure that they use them to their advantage in the future.
Come and talk rugby league in our forums. loverugbyleague.com.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about the international scene. It's an area which I want to concentrate a little bit more on now and over the next few minutes. Have you seen the 2010 international campaign?
New Zealand, obviously.
So it kind of dropped you in at the deep end there,
yeah,
haven't it?
Yeah, I mean, the international scene sort of frustrates me and baffles me at the same time. I think we're working towards at least something of a bit of structure now. With the way the Four Nations is, the way the European Cup feeds the Four Nations, the way the Pacific Cup feeds the Four Nations, the international game is apparently the be all and end all. I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think Papua New Guinea or Wales or France should really be competing in the Four Nations because I just think it devalues it slightly. There's a big gulf between the top three and the bottom and the rest, should I say, and that's only natural because that's them big three nations are where
it's been established, hasn't it?
Yeah,
for a long
they're,
time.
They're the only the nations that have professional clubs. Wales are getting there; they've got the one. Obviously, New Zealand have only got the one anyway, but a big proportion of Kiwis play in the NRL, and I just think that at least it's getting there. It'd be interesting to see how the World Cup goes in a few years, but in terms of on the pitch, New Zealand beating Australia in the Four Nations final.
Was that expected?
Well, New Zealand are the world champions, so it shouldn't perhaps come as a shock. For some reason, New Zealand won the World Cup and Australia remained sort of the team to beat, mainly due to New Zealand's failings in 2009. But England were, I think, a bit unfortunate with a few. I think it's hard to judge England on 2010, I'd say, because the injuries that they had, you've just got nothing. When you're missing four or five key men, there's nothing really you can't really judge them on that. I think if maybe Eastman had been there, things might have been a little different.
Jamie Peacock, of course, he's a huge competitor with Leeds, and for him not to be there, and Danny Maguire as well, he'd had such an influential season with Leeds, set up so much. For me, Danny Maguire has become this complete halfback we've been waiting to emerge in our game over the last few years. Yeah, we always knew when he first entered the scene he was a good try scorer, he was good at supporting play, but now he's added a couple of extra strings to his bow, hasn't he? Very similar to how Gary Schofield did a long, long time ago.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Maguire and always have been. I like the sort of support play that he sort of... I mean, Richie Miley's very similar in that respect as well. And obviously they missed Adrian Morley, was missing too, and I'd have probably made a few different decisions. I'd have perhaps taken Martin Gleeson over as well, but
he had a very, very consistent season with Wigan,
and it was a bit surprising. I think there's still a few question marks over some players getting back to the World Cup, but at the end of the day everyone should have a clean slate year on year, I think, and Gleeson deserved his chance. But next year's another year and it'll see how it goes. I mean, I don't know what their plans are with the mid-season international, but I think something needs to be done with that because I don't think it's
you don't think a test against France is testing us enough, is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not sure. The international game's one of great mystery, I think, and nobody really knows what to do or where to go with it, and ideally you'd want a mid-season international that can capture the imagination, but at the minute it's just a sort of afterthought. And
well, what a capture your imagination. I'll give you my thoughts in a minute.
I'm not sure, but I mean, I didn't go to the mid-season international. I actually watched it on telly. And,
no, neither did I, to be honest.
And if there is a mid-season international, it should be capturing everyone's imagination, but the fact was that it was England against France in front of, was it 6,000 or 7,000?
About 7,500, actually.
Something like that. And
which is still a respectable crowd.
It's still a respectable crowd.
But it could have been better, couldn't it?
But when you're looking at the aggregate figures of who's watching Super League, week in, week out, and championships week in and week out. And the thing was, you're watching it on telly, and England won it at a canter, and that's simply it. They won it at a canter, and people want to, when you contrast that to, say, Australia playing New Zealand or the state of origin in Australia, it bears no comparison. And I think that's the difficulty, and it's impacting the domestically as well, because we've got this attitude that by bringing new French teams and new Welsh teams in, it'll all of a sudden dramatically improve the national team. And you've seen that with Wales, that is the case. But to get
is it at the detriment of the rest of the competition?
Not necessarily that. I just mean, is it more of a case of dragging England down to their level rather than bringing them up to England's current level, or is it a case of meeting in between or something like that? And I'm not sure what the alternative is, to be honest, but it's just a little frustrating, I think, the mid-season situation, especially for clubs that lose players to injury.
Well, I'll tell you what I'd like to see. I'd like to see some semblance of almost a state of origin or a tri series. I think Lancashire, Yorkshire, potentially a French element to it, but I was thinking more perhaps the overseas players that we've got in Super League. There's a number of good overseas players who are over here doing extremely good jobs with the clubs, and to be honest, some of those have international experience, so that might test our players a little bit better and get them a little bit better prepared, because I think what has always been said is that Australia has the state of origin series. Their top players, they know each other, they get to train with each other probably a lot more than our players do. And by the time he gets round to international competition, they're in the group, aren't they?
Yeah, they've had the training, the sort of training, they have the odd training session and training weeks, don't they, during the season.
It's not really enough, though,
but
I don't think.
I would agree with all that. I think part of the problem is that you've got the 27 rounds of Super League, you've got the Challenge Cup. For some reason, we don't play midweek matches, and that means there's no room for anything really, and to fit in that. The players are always sort of harping on they don't want to play more games, and there's not enough weeks in the season to stretch out. It's more, could you play the Challenge Cup midweek? I don't know. The crowds are declining. Maybe turning it into a midweek competition might revitalise it a little bit. I don't know. I think
Wednesday night under floodlights,
something like that. Obviously, you used to have the full lit cup years ago. Why not turn the Challenge Cup into a midweek event in football? The League Cup's played in midweek. The thing that gets me is that you end up towards, same with the Northern Rail Cup as well, you get to the stage where teams have got weeks off for cup rounds when they're not playing. And I just think that, okay, it's all right for the teams that are through because they're playing, but for the club, they're losing the money from not playing on that weekend. And then it's a gap in the season where if not everybody was playing, you could put an international in there, or you could put another round of Super League in there. I don't know, but I think maybe something should be looked at to play the cup in midweek, maybe, which could then free up a couple of weekends for internationals. I mean, the state of origin's played in midweek anyway in Australia.
That's true. It's always Wednesdays, isn't it? The state of origin.
So I don't know. There always seems to be resistance to play more games, which I find bizarre. But I think especially championship teams would love to play a couple more games, because at the moment to run a professional sports club playing 20-24 games, I don't think it's enough. Especially when you compare it to the old days when they probably played up to 40 games a season.
Well, I want to move on to that, actually. I think you've touched on a really good point there with how fixtures. I have to admit, I don't know how the Rugby League structures its season. And forgive me for sounding a little bit ignorant when I say that. However, I am of a similar ilk to yourself. I don't think that certainly the smaller clubs, they play enough games. I know at times last season, for example, Rochdale Hornets, Swinton Lions, yeah, okay, these might not be the big names that we are used to hearing about week in, week out, but they're missing huge swathes of the season with no games because of what you mentioned before, cup games taking preference. And I just think that there's not enough revenue. They need to come up with some sort of fixture preparation, really, which will get more games into the calendar.
Yeah, the especially cup weeks, as we said. I mean, the problem is if you're in the Northern Rail Cup and you get knocked out in the group stage, for instance, you and then you get knocked out of the Challenge Cup. Someone like Rochdale, if they get knocked out, they could the Challenge Cup and the Northern Ireland Cup, say that's 2 out of 3 weeks, they might have their bye week in that week as well, especially with the odd number. That's changing because of Blackpool's demise, but they could go 3 weeks without a game. Then there might be another cup match, and it's just missing that sort. You need to get the fans in as well. You need a bit of structure more than anything, because if you're going to the Rochdale game week in, week out, and then all of a sudden they're not playing for 4 or 5 weeks, then you just, you find something else to do and you stop going. And the fan, and the teams at that level need to do what they can to get people in. And I mean, I've got a lot of views about that, which I won't go into now, but the fixture scheduling doesn't help, and that's why I think maybe looking at a midweek thing might recapture the imagination, because at the moment, certainly if you look at the crowds on Challenge Cup weeks, it's almost as if fans think, oh, it's a week off, because the attendance is, obviously you get the hardcore and the diehard fans that go no matter what, but there's a definite drop off between league games and cup games, and I know the RFL have been doing their best to revitalise that in recent years, but why not try it midweek?
And certainly going back 15 years, the Challenge Cup was always the pinnacle of everyone's season, wasn't it? It was always the game which captured the imagination. Clubs usually got the highest attendance in it. I mean, I can bring out history books galore which kind of show this, but I'm not going to. I don't want to send you to sleep in the middle of this podcast. But that just sort of shows that the interest was there. Where has it gone wrong?
Who knows it? I think that's the question that everyone's trying to answer. And the final's now established late August, and whereas before in May it perhaps had a greater impact because it was almost like the Challenge Cup's the first half of the season, the Super League Grand Final's the second half, but now that's sort of been sort of negated by the fact it's now in August. And then you've got...
They kind of replaced it, didn't they, with the magic experience.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And the problem is as well is there's such a long gap between games in the later stages, particularly. Like, I think they played the quarterfinals and then they had six or seven weeks until the semi-finals or something along them lines?
I remember an interview actually with Tony Smith last year, and literally he was interviewed after the quarter-final and he said there was 10 weeks between that and the semi-final, and he wasn't willing to talk about what might happen in the semi-final because there was 10 weeks of Super League rugby to get through before then.
Yeah, exactly, and it's just, I think that's where it's difficult, because you don't know whether something's going to work until you try it and things like that, but I don't know, you've got to keep trying things out, especially in rugby league situation, and maybe going midweek would catch people's imagination. You never know. I mean, I'd certainly love to get to a game in a midweek, so instead of waiting 7 days, I can go a game in a midweek.
I always think there's something special about games being played underneath floodlights as well.
Well, that's the primary reason a lot of teams play on Friday nights. To generate a good bit of atmosphere. And there'd be no, I don't think there'd be anything. There wouldn't be much better than getting a nice knockout cup match on a midweek night. Something a bit different. And naturally, you've got difficulties associated with that in terms of travel for fans. But that said, we play championship games on a Thursday night for the television. So what difference does it make on a Tuesday and Wednesday night? You could even group the early stages by location and do it that way. I don't know. There's lots of things that you could probably discuss and debate over. It's just, unfortunately, Dave, me and you aren't in charge.
No, and I'm sure that we will debate him at some other point, because I would like to get more on record about what your thoughts are for the game. And perhaps we could put a bit of a dossier together for the Rugby League to look at. Perhaps they might listen to me and you eventually.
Well, maybe, yeah, but I don't think putting both Lee and Widnes in Super League will be at the top of their agenda.
No, probably not, probably not. LoveRugbyLeague.com for all your rugby league needs. I just wanted to sort of ask you as well, because there's been a little bit in the news over the last month or two about Boxing Day fixtures. Where do you stand with Boxing Day fixtures?
I think I wrote a blog recently on Love Rugby League saying that I personally don't see the point in them anymore. It's a tradition that's basically carried over from the winter era that people have clung on to a little bit, because they remember going to games on Boxing Day, exciting games in the league, whereas now they're just meaningless friendlies. That, put simply, that's what they are. And the thing is, they come far too early in a team's pre-season preparation to be of any benefit. You're talking 6 weeks before the start of the season, and there's no way that a coach could honestly want to play at that stage, and really it's only done for the benefit of the fans. And I mean, it's almost as if the season's being dragged forward a little bit by the fact that teams are playing on Boxing Day, and in some cases teams have only been training 3 weeks, or it's only it'd only be 6 weeks, not even that, since the Four Nations final. And with the weather conditions we've had, teams probably haven't been doing a lot of outside work. And
well, certainly the last 2 years, we've had two of the worst winters that have gone on record, haven't we?
Exactly, yeah. And if your teams aren't going to risk players on a Boxing Day friendly because they've just not been the preparation. But then, like you've said, I think it was Martin Afire that said on Twitter about maybe reintroducing the Charity Shield on Boxing Day and making it a big rugby league date on the calendar.
I think it would be interesting. But you've already mentioned the pitfalls there, because, say, for example, we take Warrington, who did extremely well, won the cup for the second year running, and we take Wigan. How many of their players have been involved in the international series and the international calendar, and how many of those would actually be available at this time of year, be anywhere near playing?
Well, that's the problem. As we've said, I think it'd be really good if we could get a Boxing Day tradition of holding a Charity Shield, get it on the telly, on BBC preferably, and make it a sort of Christmas tradition that the first game of 2000, well, obviously it's not in the new year, but the first game of the new year is between the two teams that signify the previous year gone. It's almost like a switchover from the 2010 season to 2011 or whatever. Get the clubs to sort of promise to field maybe 75% strength teams, so you could give the international lads a bit of time off, hold it somewhere neutral, so Warrington, Wigan.
So there's a sense of occasion.
Yeah, they could play at Widnes, say, or something like that. I mean, Salford would probably want to pitch for it with everything else with their new ground when it becomes available. But make it a sort of event for neutrals to go to. Another one in the calendar. It's another trophy. There's not many trophies in rugby league when you look at it. You're looking, Wigan, Warrington can win what? The Super League, the Challenge Cup. If they win Super League, then they unlock the World Club Challenge, if you like. There's not an awful lot of silverware to be chasing, and if you put that Charity Shield up there, who knows, it could turn into a bit of an event. Plus, it moves clubs away from this Boxing Day tradition of playing friendlies, and then enables them to start playing friendlies sort of mid-January, where they're more ready for it. Again, it all depends on whether it's feasible for having Wigan v Warrington on a Boxing Day and whether that fits in with their plans. But you've got to try new things, and that might be one of them.
Now, Martin Afire might have had his say from a Super League point of view, but one person who has had his say from a lower division point of view is Carl Harrison, the Batley Bulldogs coach. Now, he's got a friendly already set up against Halifax. Now, as we know, Halifax won the Championship Grand Final last season. Batley won the Northern Rail Cup. Do you reckon the scope for a Charity Shield event at Championship level as well?
I don't see why not. The way things are now is that Super League is very separate to the Championship. There's no interchange between the two, so it makes sense that for the Championship to have their own sort of competition like that. And I mean, you could even play them as a double header,
home and away, and do it on aggregate.
Well, you could do, yeah. I mean, you could do. There's various things you could do, or I think we were saying before, you could have Halifax and Batley as a curtain raiser to Wigan and Warrington if you wanted.
Make it a real sense of occasion, yeah, so it's all being held on the same day.
Yeah, make it a big thing and get them both televised, and that might work out all right. Even if you didn't hold it on Boxing Day, you could have it on New Year's Day, give them that extra week, perhaps. Turn it into a New Year's Day tradition,
yeah,
something like that, because that then brings it closer to the start of the season. I think Carl Harrison being at Batley, he's sort of being able to think of it from a sort of, okay, Batley, we're aiming for the top of the Championship. Perhaps they're not thinking beyond that, but they want to be as high as good as they can be at the level they're at. And
do you think he's perfectly placed as well? Because he's obviously sampled life at the top end of Super League, hasn't he? He had a couple of very successful seasons at Salford where he were very competitive in that top end of the table. He was a very successful player, of course, wasn't he, in his day?
Well, that's right. I think Harrison's experienced both sides of it. And obviously now Super League's cut off from the Championship. The only problem is that you've got clubs who are who are sort of stuck in between, who are sort of, they think that they're too big for the Championship, but they can't quite get into the Super League. And whereas teams like Batley, they'd be quite happier, I think, to be, if they could aim to be the top of the second tier, of the semi-professional tiers, if you like. And I think that's what Rugby League, the changes Rugby League's going to see in the next 10 years is that once everybody gets settled with where they're at, I think that's where competitions are going to become better, because I think Super League's a closed shop now, but I don't think necessarily all the teams that want to be in it are in it. And I think
there needs to be something left for everybody else, doesn't there?
Yeah, I think eventually when everybody's relatively happy where they're placed, when all the right teams are in Super League and when all the remaining teams are happy at Championship level, then I think then we could start settling down on a few things. But at the moment, for the foreseeable future, you're going to have teams like Widnes Lee, Halifax, who are always knocking on that door, wanting to be let out and into the top flight. But anything, another trophy would be an excellent addition. It'd be a good curtain raiser to the season.
For more of the latest on rugby league news, log in to loverugbyleague.com.
Now, you mentioned about settling. We want your opinions really here, James, and I'll have my word as well, about how you think pre-season preparation are going at three Super League clubs. First of all, Catalan Dragons. They've had quite a big input and output during the close season, haven't they? They've brought in Vincent Dupont from Toulouse. They've brought in Scott Joro from Newcastle, a half-back. Interestingly enough, they've got Ian Henderson coming in as well from New Zealand Warriors, and they've recruited Steve Menzies from Bradford.
Yeah, Catalan's finished poorly. They had a terrible season. Let's not beat about the bush around that one. And the new coach has come in Trent Robinson, and they had to refresh the squad, because I suppose that's the beauty of the franchise system, was that they knew partway through last season that it was written off, and thus they could look towards this season, meaning they could get Trent Robinson appointed, get him in, signing his own players. They've made a handful of good signings, a handful of unknown signings. Obviously, under Mick Potter a few years ago, their success that season turned a few of them players into household names, like the likes of Thomas Bosk. Probably were not really on many people's radars until that season, and he was the star man that year, and all of a sudden he's a threat to every Super League club. And
to be fair to Bosk, he missed a huge part of last season, didn't he? He only came in really for the second half, when there was an improvement in form really for the Catalan Dragons.
Yeah, a lot goes through him, and I think the good thing about Trent Robinson is that he knows the French scene, obviously having been at Toulouse previously, and they need to be, the whole point of Catalan's being about is that they're bringing in French players, and they're encouraging the recruitment of French players. I think they've got a couple coming in from Lesignan.
Yeah, they've got one coming in from Toulon Rugby Union as well.
Yeah, so
I don't know too much about him, sadly, you know, so I will endeavour to try and find out a bit more.
It's a shame it's not Johnny Wilkinson.
I bet they'd love to get Johnny Wilkinson on board.
They could have done with him for a bit of profile, but Catalans will be looking to get themselves back on track and get competing for the players. I think the issue is that you've got an established probably six who you'd expect to finish in the top eight. So that means that the other eight are fighting over
two spots.
And the difficulty is that partway through that season, you don't know what's what.
Moving on, the Crusaders. We started off at the top of the show going on about, shall we say, the challenges that they've had in the close season. They've not really made too much of an impact on their squad so far. They've only signed the three players that we're aware of at this moment in time, in Paul Johnson, Stuart Reardon and Richard Moore. They've let a heap of players leave. Anthony Blackwood's on the outer. Nick Youngquest has gone to Castleford. Tommy Lee has signed for Wakefield. Luke Dyer has gone back to Australia. Jamie Thackeray up at Barrow. And Rocky Tremarchi, he's been released.
Yeah.
Where do you see them coming?
They've lost Haraki as well. He's gone to Leeds, I think, as well. Yeah, that's another one. But I think they've obviously had the problems, and that's impacted on Yestin Harris's his recruitment, and I'm sure they've got a few coals of the fire to get recruits. It's going to be difficult for them on the -4, but they were in this position last season, and they did very well under Brian Noble. Maybe it all depends on how much Harris has learned under Brian Noble, as to how they're going to do. I think think if they can, I'd imagine a top 10 finish would do them for next season. I think that'd be their realistic target. If they can get into the playoffs, that'd be an absolutely outstanding season. Harris being the Wales coach, you'd hope that a few more of the young lads like Lloyd White.
They've got Ben Flower up there as well, haven't they? Who's done a good job when he's been asked to.
Yeah, they've got a few like Lloyd White and Lake Kieran. They're all getting a chance professionally at Scorpions, and they made a few appearances last season down there. And if Yestin can and blood a few of them at Super League level this season, then that may well be the key for them. Naturally, he's going to want to get a few players prepared for the Four Nations task, and what better encouragement for a young Welsh player at Crusaders to establish himself in the first team for a shot at the Aussies at the end of the season?
You've talked about the youngsters in the squad, but there are a couple of old heads, aren't there? They've got the likes of Clinton Shifkowski, for example. He came in from Rugby Union last term, as did a certain Gareth Thomas, who took to Rugby League eventually as the season went on, ended up a very influential figure for Wales's international campaign. How do you think he'll go in his second year as a pro?
Yeah, I think he's obviously going to benefit much like a youngster would. We were talking off air earlier about certain young players in the lower leagues, and if they can get the games under their belts in year one, then in year two they've got over that sort of naive phase, and that's very much what Gareth Thomas has done. I'm sure Yestin will be looking at retaining. I'm sure they've already got it sorted in retaining the likes of Shifkowski and obviously Jared Samet and players like that, so that the difficulties that they have had are sort of minimalised, if you like, by a bit of stability on the park. And they're going to be a very interesting team to keep an eye on next season.
Let's stick with our development clubs, Harlequins. Now, they've only done a little bit of recruiting, it would be fair to say. They've got Nick Kouperatis coming in, who's a Greek international. They've got Chris Bailey, who's the brother of the Bailey who's gone to Salford. They've also signed Luke Ambler on loan from Leeds and Mike Burnett from Hull FC. They've also currently got Jack Lattus, who's trialling with them.
Well, Harlequins, they had the difficulty, didn't they? There was a lot of rumours going around at the end of last season which suggested that the club might be battling on, but fortunately the chairman sorted that out. They lost Brian McDermott, of course. He's obviously ended up at Leeds, so Rob Powell's come in.
Be an interesting bit of a transition, because he was he's stepping up from assistant coach, isn't he?
Well, it's interesting that Crusaders have got Yestin Harris and Harlequins have got Rob Powell, in that they both have been involved with sort of developing younger players in their respective roles. And I'd imagine that Harlequins, since under Brian McDermott, okay, they haven't been great on the pitch, but he's brought through a good few young players, the likes of Lou McCarthy Scarsbrook, who's obviously ended up at St Helens.
Will Sharp, who's now gone to Hull.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about, the expansion, introducing these players to rugby league, developing them, and obviously getting snapped up by the big boys. Eventually, Harlequins, I'm sure, will be looking at having a team of where the likes of Will Sharp and Lou McCarthy Scarsbrook could stay and achieve their probably trophy winning ambitions at Harlequins. It'll be interesting to see how Powell does. The problem that obviously he faces is that it's not just about on the pitch with a team like Harlequins. You've got to be conscious of getting people through the gates and getting the money in and bits and bobs like that, and that's part of the challenge, but I'm sure that he'll be well equipped to do that.
And I've got to say, because Danny Orr's been lending some valuable support to helping bring those young players through. He's not going to be there either, so they're going to be missing quite a lot of experience. I was looking at Luke Williamson, he's retired. We mentioned it before, Louis McCarthy Scarsbrook's gone to St Helens. Ryan Esters, who perhaps didn't play that much of a part on the field, but was a good part of the squad, he's left to go to York. And Luke May, who's one of their own, has gone to London Scholars.
Well, the three teams we've looked at today a bit of an unknown. We don't know how Catalans are going to do in comparison to last season, because they've changed much of their squad. We don't know how Crusaders are going to cope with the points deduction, and Harlequins, we just don't know what sort of 117 they're going to be putting out, and in a sense it adds to the bit of unpredictability, in that you honestly can't really position them in the league. You'd like to think that they won't become the whipping boys, and you'd like to think they compete, but it certainly adds a bit of interest to the pre-season predictions.
James, thank you for your time. That's all we've got time for now on the second Love Rugby League podcast. But myself and James will be back soon with more previews, chat and banter.